Bessie, good morning to you.
My name is Jack Bessie from Kearney, Nebraska. I represent Diana Fife, the appellant, and she was also the defendant below. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. So there are 4 points that I'd like to address with the court in my oral argument today. The first is what I think is a very heavy issue, and that is a jurisdictional issue. I believe that that the district court lacked jurisdiction because Diana Fife wore two different hats during this lawsuit. She was a landowner.
What was the hat she was wearing when they made the contract?
She was the owner herself. The hat that happened after she entered into the original written agreement was that she transferred the land into a trust, which existed at the time that she entered into the written lease, but she had not legally transferred the land into the trust.
What we're dealing with here is an action for breach of contract, an action at law, correct?
It was initially an action for injunction and damages. It was not an action on breach of contract.
Isn't that what it morphed into, though?
It did morph, yes. This case morphed. It started, we had a temporary injunction hearing, we had a permanent injunction hearing, then we had a damages trial. But it did start as just an injunctive relief hearing based upon an ambiguous contract term that said this contract is going to go from this date to this date, and it's a 10-year period. It turns out that this date to this date is actually 11 years. So the case, though, at the time when they entered into that original farm lease, she owned it personally. She didn't own it as the trustee. But immediately, well, it'd be about a year or so before the lawsuit was filed, she did transfer it into her trust.
The judgment that was ultimately rendered was against her personally?
Correct. And so, as a necessary party...
Why is the trustee necessary? If I enter into a contract with the bank down the street and say, I'm going to pay you, and then I turn around and say to Judge Funk, oh, you're going to pay, the bank still can come after me, can't they? And why can't this party still come after me?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, the court did not determine joint and several liability because that issue wasn't decided by the court.
I'm not talking about joint and several liability. I'm talking about the liability of the parties to the contract.
Ms. Fife, though, the landowner at the time that the actions took place, she initially owned the property, but that doesn't mean that she is liable. The assets, her personal assets are subject to garnishment and execution at this point to collect $51,000. My argument is that the trust, since they were a necessary party, they should have been involved in this case from the beginning.
How are they a necessary party?
The trust is necessary because that's the landowner. That's where the crops were grown. The damages for which the plaintiffs...
The trust didn't enter into the contract.
The trust did not enter into the contract, but the trust owned the land where the crops were grown.
Who owned the land at the time of the alleged breach?
The land was owned by was owned by the trust at that point.
The alleged breach would have been roughly December 31st, 2016?
She gave notice of termination of the lease agreement, and she did that as trustee of the trust.
And the record showed that the only information we have about when the transfer happened would have been approximately September of 2016, is that correct?
That's correct.
Would the appellant have a claim against the trust for reimbursement at this point?
That would be an issue that would, again, I mentioned joint and several liability, but that's an issue as to what the liability would be for her, and we, of course, did have that determined since it wasn't decided by the court.
And was the trust able to represent itself due to the fact it was not there? Represents own interest.
It was not. Now, it was raised as in the amended answer and counterclaim, so the issue was there, but the trust was not represented at any time by counsel.
Does the fact that the only way the trust becomes involved in this is that if the appellant turns and seeks reimbursement from them, Does that have any impact on this indispensable party?
Well,
let me clarify just a little bit further on that. The fact that it's the same person, that she would essentially be turning and making a claim against her own trust, or herself as trustee of that trust.
But the law is clear, whether it's a corporation or an LLC or a trust, they are independent entities. So it may be that she's wearing two different hats and it's the same person, but they have separate liability, and the court would need to determine what the trust liability would be. Of course, that isn't the real reason that we're here, because we think that there were several other mistakes that the district court made. The biggest one is we believe that the contract, actually this written contract, didn't exist, because in 2015 they changed the way the farming operation occurred from a row crop lease, which is what the written lease dealt with, to an alfalfa, which is a perennial crop, and so the contract changed. That contract, that the court determined the language, whether it's a 10 or 11 year, didn't exist in 2015 or 2016 because it was substantially changed. We went from having a completely different type of crop that was grown. The plaintiff, who was the farmer, planted the crop. They farmed it for a couple of years, and since there was no new written contract, Nebraska law is very clear that it's an oral year-to-year lease, and she timely gave notice of termination of that lease. And that's where I believe the court made its mistake.
So when they changed the farming operation, are you contending that was a termination of the previous lease, or was it merely a modification, an oral modification of the written lease?
It was a termination, Your Honor.
And what's your authority for that proposition?
The authority has to do with contract law, and that when the substance of the contract changes materially and substantially, there exists no basis in the contract. So everything about the contract, Your Honor, changed when they went from row crop to a perennial, to the way they shared their crop arrangement, to who was going to be providing the care of the crop. There wasn't anything about the original.
How did the term or length of the contract change in the oral modification?
The district court found that that contract term still existed to be 11 years rather than 10 years. Our position is that the contract terminated, so there was it's a year-to-year lease.
Assume for the moment that we disagree that it terminated. How does that impact about what we do about the length of the contract? If the original term still exists, even though it's been modified in other ways, how do we deal with what that provision said? In other words, the ambiguity.
Well, I don't think you have to address that issue, but the ambiguity should have been determined just from the first contract, not from the second contract. At the first hearing, there was a temporary injunction hearing where the plaintiff testified this is to be a 10-year contract. That's what he testified to. I asked him on cross, yep, it's 10 years. At the next hearing on the permanent injunction, he changed his testimony, and he said, well, it's 10 years from the date that a pivot was installed, and that's how he gets to 11 years. So I think you can determine the term to be 10 years.
Didn't the trial court find that one party's testimony was more credible than the other with respect to the term? Wasn't there an express finding of credibility in that regard, and what are we to do with that?
There was, but I believe your de novo review of the record will show that the testimony of the plaintiff in the first hearing is so completely different than in the second hearing that there can't be credibility. I know that the trial judge was there to and made that conclusion, but if you look at that on the record and what he testified to, you can't reconcile the two.
And you're suggesting it's de novo because the case started in equity, even though it was resolved on something that sounds in law.
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, I believe that it's a de novo review of the record below. I have 10 seconds left, so I won't have any rebuttal. I also just want to mention that the damage to crop, if the judgment is upheld, is too speculative, and I briefed the issues with regard to the damage. He didn't buy any crop. There's no standard to determine what lost profits are when there's no crop. So with that, I...
Before you sit down.
Yes.
Moving back to the indispensable party question for a moment. When did the appellant first disclose to the appellee that the property had been transferred to the trust?
The first notice would have occurred when the amended answer was filed in this case, which would have been right after the temporary injunction.
My recollection of the record was she actually testified to it at the hearing before that, did she not?
She testified. She was not present at the...
She wasn't present at the first hearing, but she was present at the second
correct.
Hearing.
Yes.
And following the second hearing, the amended complaint,
yes.
amended answer file. Is that correct?
That's correct. That is correct.
That second hearing, did that occur before or after December 31st, 2016? I apologize. I can't remember the...
The hearing...
Before or after the alleged breach.
Yeah. So that would all have occurred before that date.
Before December 31st, 2016?
Yes. Oh, no. No, Your Honor. That would have been May 31st, 2017 was the first hearing. It would have been July 26th of 2017.
With that being the case, how would the undisclosed principal theory apply to this matter?
It's the burden is on the plaintiff to bring the necessary parties in. So you would generally do a title search, and if they'd done a title search, the deed would have shown up that she had known the property herself individually, the trust did.
When one is dealing with an agent that they don't know is acting as an agent for someone else, doesn't the undisclosed principal theory allow them to elect to either sue the agent or the principal or both?
But the agent in this case did sign as trustee on the contract that she proposed way back at the beginning.
But she wasn't a trustee at that time.
She was a trustee. The trust did exist. She just didn't transfer the land until right before this lawsuit.
The trust was not the landowner at that time.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Brower, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Sig Brower. I represent TNT Cattle Company, Inc., the plaintiff below, and as I inadvertently informed this court, the appellant above. I apologize for not catching that before my brief got out of the office, but I represented to you that I was another appellant. We were not. So the brief does address us properly, however, the name on the front page does not. A couple of things that I would like to return to here that Mr. Bessie addressed is, and the court commented or questioned about, is the issue of who were the parties here. The parties, when this case started, when the relationship started, were the same as they were when this action started. That is Mrs. Fife and TNT Cattle Company. They're the only two parties ever involved in the transaction of the lease agreement for this farming operation.
Who owned the land at the time of the breach? According to the evidence in the record.
I believe it was transferred sometime in 16, and I apologize. I know that the deed is in here. I don't have that off the top of my head. I think it was either 15 or 16, so I believe it would have been owned by the trust prior to the breach. Ms. Fife never...
I'm going to ask you, with that being the case, who actually is the party who kicked your client off the property?
Ms. Fife never related at any time, as Mr. Bessie said, until the filing of the second, the amended complaint and amended answer, that there was an issue with the trust, that there was a trust that owned the property. She never disclosed that at any time, and Mr. Fife, or Mr. Trappi, the owner and operator of TNT, did all of his dealings with Ms. Fife directly as an individual. There was never any indication that she was...
Let me go back to the timeline, if you're willing. So at the time, this is an asset that was put into the trust, and at the time the asset was put into the trust, was it encumbered by a breach?
The asset being the farm?
Yeah.
Was it encumbered by what?
A breach.
A breach?
Yeah.
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you.
I believe that the operations continued on as they had for years until 2015, when Ms. Fife said, I don't want to deal with GMO crops anymore. Want to change it to a hay cropping operation the way it was before this lease, written lease, was entered. Mr. Trampy agreed to do that, and he proceeded then to go through all of the processes necessary to get the farm changed over to an irrigated farm. There was no, the land was registered for irrigation, but it wasn't being used at the time. So he went through the process of getting the land registered. It was registered, but he went through the process of getting the land prepared. There had to be some tree removal, some leveling, bought the pump, bought the motor, bought the pivot, or at least conducted all the research to do that so it could be set up for an irrigation operation. The 10-11-year issue arose because the two of them, between themselves, decided that they would make this contract on their own. The contract does consist of two documents. They both had a hand in preparing those documents. Ms. Fife drew up one, sent it to Mr. Trampy. He saw there were some deficiencies, wrote up another document. He signed them both, sent them to Ms. Fife. She signed them both. She did execute her name as trustee on a document, and she was a trustee of a trust that originally owned this land from which she purchased it as an individual. It was her uncle, I believe.
Let's move back to the indispensable party question real quickly. Why would the trust not be an indispensable party in this? What is your best argument?
Because the trust never had any dealings with TNT. It was never disclosed as an entity that had any relationship to the farming activities. Mr. Trampy was never told, never asked to consent to a transfer of the lease between Ms. Fife and her trust. So there was never any issue raised there. There was no reason to bring TNT in because it was never a party to any transactions between these parties.
When the amended answer was filed and the declaration was made at that point that the trust was the owner of the property, why did the appellee not bring the trust in at that time and the trustee in her capacity as such?
The issue was raised in the hearing following, it was in the second hearing in which Ms. Fife appeared, and she was asked during that hearing whether she was the owner of the property, and she said she was. Then over a period of time through that hearing, there was a discussion about the trust that came up. The appellant raised the issue with the court about whether or not the trust should be brought in as a party, and the court below said no, that when she filed her original answer in this case, she acknowledged that she was a non-resident owner of that land at that time, which was not true, as we later found out, but that's what she said. The court below said, no, the trust is not the party here. It's Ms. Fife.
When this was resolved finally in the district court, was it an action at law for breach of contract, or was it a claim in equity for injunctive or other relief?
We filed a claim with three causes of action. part of it was accurately referred to by Mr. Bessie, is we were seeking an injunction originally to prevent him from being kicked off so he could farm that land out the last year of the lease and be done with it. The judge did not find that he was entitled to a temporary injunction, a TRO, so we ended up pushing the hearing on the temporary back until the middle of the haying season. At that time, the judge then declined to grant the injunction because there were too many, I guess he thought, factual issues surrounding the contract. So he scheduled it then for a trial, or he made a determination, I take it back, at that there was a contract, but at the time that was made, it was too late to put Mr. Trampy in possession of the property, the farm, and so he scheduled it for a damages hearing. And that's what then became a law action. So that was our third cause of action, was for damages, which would be a law action. I don't agree that this court has de novo jurisdiction of the final trial hearing, and I don't believe Ms. Fife cited as error any of the earlier findings of the court. So I don't think any of the equitable issues are before this court. I believe it's only the law issue.
When title to the subject property was transferred to the trust, were the rights, if any, under the lease agreement transferred along with it?
There was nothing done, nothing mentioned, asked about, suggested, or indicated in any way that the trust was even existed or that there had been a transfer by Ms. Fife from herself individually to the trust of this land. So the answer, that's the long answer, no, nothing was done to transfer the responsibilities and rights under the lease.
Assuming that the deed of the land carried with it an assignment of the lease, does that have any effect on the original owner's, landlord's, contractual liability under the lease?
I do not believe it does, because I believe the agency law here discloses or requires that when an agent is not disclosed, that agent has personal liability. If it's not, it doesn't have a disclosed principal, then the agent has liability for whatever agreements it enters into. Well, I just ask the court to affirm the decision below. I thank you for your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is EM versus Health and Human Services, combined with Paris versus Health and Human Services and Mariquin versus Health and Human Services. Is it Ms. Durr?